Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Hello there, my friend. We have a great show lined up for you with Miriam Dady in the Business Spotlight and her guest. Bill Cotterell will be with me talking Florida politics. And Tim Linnefelt with another edition of the Linnefelt Sports Report. Followed by this wonderful conversation with Jim Croteau. He is the interim CEO for America's Second Harvest of the Big Bend. So you stay with me. We got a lot coming up.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office. And by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done.
Truck and car concept. We're your one-stop shop for tripping out to truck. Truck and car concept. People with their cars, we're number one by far.
Hi, I'm Joe Doty. Come truck it up with me this week, and I'll save you money. Get your deluxe detail package, complete window tinting, and heavy-duty floor mats starting at $339.95.
Truck and car concept. We're your one-stop shop for tripping out your truck. Truck and car concepts. People with their cars, we're number one by far.
You'll save big bucks on the package, and I'll even throw in a great pair of free sunglasses. Come on, truck it up with us this weekend, and bring your cars, too. You're gonna love it.
Truck and car concepts. We're your one-stop shop, we always aim to please. Truck and car concepts. Everything is here from A to Z.
Call 656-8800.
Thank you for being with me, my friend. Glad to have you here on this occasion when we have such a host of able folks joining us in the next 2 hours. As I look back over the last number of weeks, we've been fortunate, I think, and it has been fortuitous that we've been able to talk with the likes of Michelle Ray Winkle Vasalinda and Representative Halsey Bashirs. We've talked with local commissioners. All of this having to do with how we manage what we do and those issues of the day that have to do with our way of life, the political life that we live, regardless of our affiliations and our interests. There are interests at hand, and so we've asked Bill Cotterell to kind of help us decipher a little bit. Bill is a good friend of the show, as many of you know, a senior political writer for the local Tallahassee Democrat, has done that. I think he started when he was 10 years old and refuses to stop. So we'll be chiding him about his retirement as such. But nonetheless, he just continues to bring us insight. And it's a welcome voice here because his history in this, his familiarity with the way in which Florida politics plays out from year to year is robust, insightful. We could say a lot of things. There's several adjectives that I've drummed up here. But Bill is such a good sport about all of that, too, without trying to betray of any of his own allegiances or his point of view. He really does a good job of keeping us mindful of the more objective points. And so when it comes to something like gerrymandering, which is now the topic for this next special session, which I believe is scheduled for August 10th coming up, at what cost, by the way, to the public? Don't even want to go down that path here at the moment, but we'll talk to Bill at length here in the first hour of the show. Of course, we have with us the very lovely and able Miriam Dady. Miriam's going to be with us here in just a moment with another contribution to a Tallahassee Business Spotlight. And if I'm not mistaken, she has this young fella who is responsible for something called Socially Loved. So we're going to learn all about that with Miriam and her guest in the Business Spotlight. And in the second hour, we'll have Tim Linnefelt with another edition of the Linnefelt Sports Report. And while we're talking about Florida politics and all the drama related there, why not? Let's talk about Florida State football, some of the off-field antics and drama and woes and challenges and headaches. And man, it just never ceases, it seems, when it comes to how things get played out around this town. So you never have to wait to find out what the next thing is, because it's coming at you. And Tim, in his part, will try to help us focus on the game as such. And with FSU football camp kicking off this coming week, we'll get his insight as to who the players are, people to watch, what his a bit of prognostication there as to who he thinks the starting quarterback is going to be and all that. So Tim Linnefelt with us, and then a new friend to the show, but a longtime friend of Tallahassee and the region, a guy named Jim Croteau is the interim chief executive officer, the CEO for America's Second Harvest of the Big Bend. And Jim has graciously agreed to be with us here in the second hour to talk at length about the face of hunger in our community and what America's Second Harvest is doing, has been doing for a number of years. And here's an interesting factoid. In our 11-county region, that is to say, the counties, including Leon County, that make up what we call the Big Bend, one in six adults and one in four children lack access to enough safe, nutritious, and socially acceptable food for a healthy and productive life. Okay, well, let's break that down a bit here. So one in six adults, one in four kids, don't have food that you and I would want to eat. Okay, that's a simple way of putting it. You'd look at it and go, I'm not eating that. Well, guess what? They wouldn't either, and they don't have that available to them. If that's one in four, 25% of the kids in 11 counties are faced with that as a daily reality. Jim's going to bring us up to date on their progress as an organization in trying to fight that battle. And, of course, as we do so, we want to point to the Tallahassee Food Challenge, which is our way of trying to keep us all abreast of the need and keep us posted on ways in which we can help, whether it's in cash contributions or volunteering our time or food donations. All of that helps them achieve their mission, which, by the way, is really about providing food for all of the food charities, food assistance charities in our communities that rely on America's Second Harvest as a point of supply. They're sort of at the top of this. They're at this meta level of food inspection, making sure that it is appropriate and consumable, and then distribution. They make sure that the food gets out to the local food pantries, whether they're churches or nonprofit charities. They're all out there, but Second Harvest makes sure that it happens when they need it. Well, they need our help. And so if you go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com, you get a number of helpful points of information there. Be sure to do that for me and find out how you can be a part. We're going to learn directly from Jim how so much of what goes on, and they are grateful. I want to tell you, I've never met people who are more engaged and more plugged into their mission than these folks. And you get from every one of them this sense that they are entirely grateful for everything that is done, particularly that in the midst of his arrival, they had to move the facility or they had to relocate from their prior storage facility into this new facility. We'll find out about that, how all that came about and how they're doing. So that's going on, and we'll look forward to having Jim with us in the second hour. Meanwhile, around town, lots of interesting things going on. I got this email from Commissioner Kristen Dozier the other day, and that was kind of a neat thing. She does this neat little newsletter that goes out, I guess, on a monthly basis. Kristen Dozier sent us out. She's the Leon County Commissioner for District 5, as you know, pointing to some of the achievements. This National Association of Counties that welcomed our fellow commissioner, Brian Deloge, he says, being elected vice president of the National Association of Counties, if I can say that. And he's going to serve as the vice president for a year before taking over as president in July of 2016. So congratulations to our very own Brian DeLoge, Commissioner for District 4. She goes on in this to point out that the county receives several awards across various categories, civic education and public information. The Club of Honest Citizens garnered an award. And there was an award granted to Domi Station, which is Leon County's startup business incubator, and that was under the category Community and Economic Development category. That was kind of cool. Let's see, what else? Oh, the Leon County Veterans Resource Center got an award, and that was under Employment and Training for County Residents. So lots of awards handed out. Leon County got its share of them. Nice to have some good news about the county these days. You stay with me. I've got more good news coming up right here. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Widen Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Widen Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Widen's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Widen is known for taking care of business. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Changing the face of talk radio in Tallahassee. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Time now for this week's Business Spotlight with Miriam Dady, brought to you by Send Out Cards.
Good morning, Tallahassee. It's Miriam Dady with Tallahassee Business Spotlight. I have a guest from the future with me today, Eric Holman of Socially Loved. Eric, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Miriam. Appreciate it.
I'm kind of kidding about the future thing, but the technology that Eric brings us with a particular kind of media is something that's going to bridge the old world and the new world. He has a way to produce a publication based on what we see in social media, and I'm going to let you explain it from there.
Yeah.
Eric, tell us about it.
Thank you. What we're doing with Socially Loved, I think you hit it real well, is, you know, bridging that gap between old world, new world. Today, you know, there's this area of study around glanceable content, and we find that our attention spans are just so short because we have so much content coming at us, whether that's advertising or that's just content streaming through on our news feeds on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're bombarded with it. And because of that, what's happening, and I've been in publishing for the last 10 years, so I've been able to see some of this stuff happening in our own products, which has led us to this new format, I guess, is that people need bites. They need relevance. They need content. And less they want to be screamed at. So what you'll find when you look at that book that you have there with the love book is that as you go through the book page by page, you find photography, professional, good, solid photography that draws people in, and then comments from people, people in the community, their customers, and what they love about them. Pictures and comments. I mean, it's not a complicated thing, but I think that the simplicity is really what engages the consumer, is that this content is what they're used to seeing. It looks a lot like their social media, but it's in their hands.
Yeah. And now the actual little blurbs of comments that people bring up here, whether it's a daycare or a chiropractor. Mm-hmm. Where did you get those?
Yeah, that information primarily comes from social media. So could be, any of the platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google+. And it's things that their customers are saying about them, the things they love about them. The cool thing about the way we go at this is we're not trying to be a rating service. Mm-hmm. It's not about winners and losers. We're trying to feature and highlight the things that people love about each business that's in the book. Obviously, there are things that people don't like about every business, and there are things that they do like.
Right.
And there's plenty of places to go to find out what's not to like about a place, and plenty of places to go to talk about those things that you're unhappy with. We're not that, and we're not trying to be that. What we are is we're trying to encourage and support the local business to show the consumers, the people that live in this area, what is it about that business that their customers love about them. If I care about that, if I'm looking for, if this restaurant right here has great atmosphere, if that's what I'm looking for, I'm going to go there.
I like
but this it. One this one looks like the comments are all about great price. That's awesome. That,
I get
that's
it.
For me.
I get it. I like that it isn't scripted. I like that you're grabbing little snippets from actual customers who have had an experience, whether it's an insurance agent or a pizza place, and you're highlighting what they have to say about that business. You know, I read something interesting online recently. There's a guy named Eric Schmidt. He said that the average amount of information on the internet in 2 days exceeds the amount of information between the dawn of civilization in 2003.
Wow. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. So it resonates with me when you say, give me a few words and some nice pictures so that I can then just process that and move on.
Right.
Because there's too much information.
There is. And what we've found is that in our other formats that we've done, we found that people, when they would come to more of our long form, whether it be an article or something with more words, they were starting to close books up and set them down, you know, kind of a I'll get to it later thing.
Yeah.
We don't have time to get to things later. If it doesn't keep my attention now, I'm probably not going to come back to it.
Yep.
So it's been really fun to see. I mean, it's a new product. We just put the books out and it's been less than 2 months, but to hear people, you know, the businesses that are in there come back to us and tell us, man, I love the way this starts conversations. I watch people conversing about it. I've sat and actually witnessed some of that at a coffee shop. I watched four women sit around a table and they each had a book as they went page by page talking about the people they knew in there and the businesses they knew.
Nice.
It's exciting because I've been in it long enough to see that the theories, sometimes you get the theories that you build something around to see them actually in practice and working. And the positivity aspect for us to see that it's a positive conversation.
Yeah.
It's an encouraging one. That's really the payoff for us. It supports the mission of what we're doing for.
Where are people going to come across these books? Are you just putting them at the waiting rooms of sponsors who are in the Socially Loved book, or are you getting them all over town?
Good question. Yeah, we really try to get them all over town. Right now we're in about 400 businesses. A lot of the ones that you do find in the book, you'll find, you know, either a rack or a stack of books there. But yeah, we're always pushing to get them into more and more places, especially local businesses. When we walk in and show them what we're doing, and it's a book of about 100 local businesses, supporting local is what small local businesses want to do. So it's been a natural thing that they would, you know, they tend to want to have around for their customers as well.
That's good. I like it. So it's not going to necessarily have, you're not going to open this book and find United Airlines and McDonald's in here. You're going to
probably
find
not.
Somebody who is who has a curio shop or who has a local plumbing business, right?
Right, yeah.
I got you.
All services, you know, from restaurants and retail to, you know, your home services, builders, contractors, you know, even professional services. We really try to cover all industries and just give you a taste of Tallahassee.
Tell me how people can get in touch with you for more information.
Mm-hmm. The easiest way is to go online to sociallyloved.com. And from there, you can get us by phone, email, or even hit us up on social media on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.
Perfect, perfect. I love that. We have kind of hit the limit on our time, and I've got more questions for you, but we'll save those for the future. When this is your first edition, correct?
Yep.
There's going to be more of those, so we will look forward to them. Eric Holman, I so appreciate you being here. Thanks.
Thanks, Miriam. I appreciate it.
And everybody out there in Tallahassee, look around the waiting room. Find a copy of Socially Loved. It's, by the way, it's very tactily pleasing, a little magazine that you can hold and look at. And keep an eye out for me, too. I'm looking around Tallahassee because I want to put you in our spotlight. Miriam Dady with Tallahassee Business Spotlight. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks.
And I'm Todd Cutlip, General Manager of Browning Moving and Logistics in Tallahassee.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help, and the Tallahassee Food Challenge is a great way to do it.
Join us in giving generously. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families.
Look for the Tallahassee Food Challenge truck at your favorite grocery store in the weeks ahead. Your donation will be delivered directly to these charities that do so much to help all of us.
Take the challenge. Fill the truck.
Feed the hungry. Find out more at TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Senior political writer for the Tallahassee Democrat, once retired, but not really. Bill Cotterell is our guest. How are you, sir?
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're glad to have you. It's clearly not in your DNA to lay this down. You just don't want to give it up, do you?
Well, I always tell people, as long as it's still fun and long as it's still interesting, I don't feel like sitting home watching daytime TV.
And can you imagine anything more entertaining than Florida politics?
It is. It's most
maybe
fun.
FSU football off-season, off the field. I mean, no want for controversy there.
It's the most fun you can have indoors with your clothes on.
I mean, so Tallahassee never ceases to deliver on a promise here. When you want to look at special sessions and off the field, we'll call it behaviors among Florida mm-hmm. legislators and administrators. And so what are some of the greasy, nitpicky things you want to bring up for our attention?
Well, of course, we're about to head into yet another special session, which was necessitated by the legislature's own action. Back in 2012, first they redistricted the legislature itself, the House and Senate, and the Florida Congressional District. And at that time, in 2012, there were a couple of brand new constitutional amendments which prohibited what is known as gerrymandering. They were not allowed to consider any incumbent protection. They're not allowed to consider any party membership to craft a Republican or a Democratic district. They were supposed to make the districts as compact as possible. And, of course, they were also required by federal law to not have any regression in minority representation. That would be the statistical odds of black voters and Hispanic voters to elect the candidates of their choice.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the opponents. That's like telling everybody to line up alphabetically according to height and weight. That it really couldn't be done.
Yeah.
They had no choice. They had to do it. They reapportioned. It went to court. They lost once. Judge Terry Lewis required them to redraw the congressional districts in the Orlando to Jacksonville area, the districts of Representative Corrine Brown and Republican Dan Webster of Orlando. They did that in a special session last year. The plaintiffs took it back to court again, and this time the Florida Supreme Court ordered the redrawing of eight districts statewide that they said the legislature had essentially cheated. They, while publicly obeying the Fair Districts Florida,
the letter of the law,
yeah,
the spirit of it was violated.
Yeah, they and some of their actions were highly questionable. There were disappearing emails. There were maps.
Of course.
Proposed maps that were circulated to lobbyists.
What is it with disappearing emails these days? I mean, it's like nobody seems to be able to keep track of the stuff that they should, but yet you can't get rid of all this stuff.
Well, they always have
from
a
your
good
cousin,
reason.
You know?
They always have a good reason for it, because at the time they hit delete and scrub the hard drive, when they do that,
right,
they didn't think they were going to get caught.
You could be like Tom Brady and just destroy your phone.
Well, you do things differently when you don't think you're going to get caught.
Yeah, I suppose.
So anyway,
there we go.
The Supreme Court said redraw 8 districts.
Yeah.
That will have a ripple effect when they change the 8 districts. Bordering districts will have to be changed, will gain and lose territory. Huh. And really about 20 districts are going to wind up having some changes here. But that'll be the special session starting August 10th through 21st. And it's always interesting with redistricting, because back before Fair Districts Florida, before those 2010 constitutional amendments, they could admit that this is the most political thing done by political people.
And, to favor their own cause, their own party.
And they could
admit,
maybe not on the record, but it was certainly understood that, you know, with other pieces of legislation, they might say, this is for the school children, this is for the citrus growers, this is for the truckers, this is for tourism. With redistricting, they can say, this is for me.
Serving.
You know, why does the line have to be here instead of here? Because I can't get reelected if it isn't. Then, of course, 2010, the voters, about 63% of them, adopted Fair Districts Florida. So in 2012, when they redrew the lines, they had to eschew all gerrymandering, all partisan intent, which is really kind of like asking a lion to become a vegetarian.
Well, in fact, is it not a very human thing for us to do? That old adage about the guy who all he has is a hammer, so the whole world looks like a nail.
Well, yeah.
I mean, if
politics is your business, you're going to think in political terms.
Yeah.
And, of course, the proof is in the outcome here. You can see it by the fact that in Florida, Democrats slightly outnumber Republicans. Mm-hmm. It's about 400,000 more Democrats in Florida than Republicans. And, of course, there's also about 2.5 million independents and minority party voters. Yet, although Democrats slightly outnumber Republicans, the congressional district is 17 Republicans and 10 Democrats.
Yeah.
Now, even given some crossover voting and some people run a better campaign and they attract members and independents, the odds of a slightly Democratic state having a congressional delegation that's about 70%, about 60% Republican, the odds of that happening by itself without some political intent are just absurdly remote.
We had a conversation with Michelle, Ray Winkle, Vasalinda, and again with Halsey Bashirs recently. And each of their conversations with us talked about the fact that the Senate president made the right move. He said, look, this isn't working, so we're going to step away, wait for cooler heads to prevail. And it turned out, of course, that the controversy was not partisan as such, except that it was all within one party.
Yeah.
You have this divisive sort of contest going on among Republicans, right?
And we saw that in the budget standoff, which, as you know, blew up the regular session 3 days early. They had to come back in special session in June to pass a budget before the fiscal year ran out. That was not the Democrats' doing. If the Democrats had set out to do that and had all voted unanimously to cause that result, they couldn't. They've got about one-third of the votes.
Yeah.
Only the Republicans. And I'm not blaming anybody, but if it was their own. If the Republicans had gotten together and decided they wanted to do something and pass a budget, it would have happened.
Well, isn't that the case, though, at a national level? It seems that Republicanism itself is really under all kinds of redefinition and contest, and no less than in the national election for the president. You've got how many, by last
17
count?
17 currently.
Yeah, I mean, it might as well be 70, because you've got that much splintering going on. in terms of money and thinking and, you know, posturing and all of that going on. So we're seeing it no less here in Florida, apparently.
Oh, yeah. And the partisan standoff, if you will, or the intra-party standoff with the Republicans, the big salient, most visible issue in the regular session was expanding Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Now that it's been upheld by the Supreme Court, the issue had been going on for about 3 years. Mm. The House refusal and the governor's siding with the House against that became the stumbling block, the thing that really ate the session.
Yeah, and Representative Beshear's then talking about the fact, and he was courteous enough to say this without trying to be blaming, but he says, you know, it really came down to egos among these leaders, we'll say, within the Republican Party. These guys, and I thought about that in terms of the personality types that are attracted to such things. These guys don't work and play well with others. So by definition, you're going to have yourself that kind of a fight going on.
There were times because they were the dog and the Democrats, maybe 4 or 5 votes, were the tail. And the Republicans were saying, well, let's just take the place over. Why should we provide the majority to help 6 or 8 Democrats do what they want to do when we can just win it outright, which, of course, after term limits passed in 1992, they did.
Talking with Bill Cotterell, senior political writer for the Tallahassee Democrat, and you are in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
In business, time is money. And in times like these, money is tight. Every second counts. Downtime can be deadly. That's why Tallahassee business owners trust the good guys, Lawson and Lawson Electrical Services. They keep business up and running hard with reliable, proven, first-time right service. Lighting, expansion, maintenance, replacement, repairs, and installations. Lawson & Lawson, giving business owners and homeowners better solutions, too, with energy-efficient green ideas to help squeeze every penny. That's what business owners need, and that's why they call Lawson & Lawson Electrical Services. And you should, too. Don't waste precious time. Trust the good guys at Lawson & Lawson Electrical Services. Call 562-4111 or on the web at llelectrical.com.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back and we're talking with Bill Cotterell, a good friend of the show, good friend to Tallahassee, and for anybody who can read. Because, you know what?
Well, that narrows it down.
You know, I'm working in my side of this. I'm up to about 620 words now that I can make sense of. Gerrymandering is one of those now that I have in my lexicon. In fact, Florida politics of the last 20 years, and I think you said this the last time you were with us, has been more efficient just because Republicans tend to be more CEO types, you know, and they're like, hey, this is the way it works. You start, you stop, you get going, you move on, and let's roll this forward. But in the wake of this year's session, we were left with kind of this sort of rut-row. Yeah. what happened?
They sort of blew their reputation for business-like efficiency when Dan Webster became Speaker in 96. He and Jim Scott, the Senate President, who was on his way out of office at that time, Tony Jennings, the incoming Senate President, they all agreed that the legislature was going to finish on time. They didn't want any of these 3 a.m. sessions when nobody really knows what's in the bill, what's in the amendment. Back in the days before email, they used to physically, a page with the amendment in hand would literally sprint between the House and Senate sometimes, not every single bill. But they would extend to 1 o'clock, to 3 o'clock, to 5 o'clock. I have left the old Capitol with the sun rising over Appalachie Parkway sometimes in the last week of a session occasionally. Well, the Republicans, when they gained control, they said, we are not doing that. We're going home by 6 o'clock at night. Committee meetings of necessity, particularly late in the session, will have to be held on weekends and at night. But we're not going to run into those things haphazardly, like by mistake. We will schedule them and announce them in advance and do business as required, but we're not going to have these chaotic sessions where they actually used to use the term invisible calendar back in the 60s and such.
And yet, on this occasion, this year's session, they end up in a sort of stalemate. And so
that's when they blew their reputation.
They come back with this special session. They get the budget passed, and then the budget goes to the governor, and the governor says, "Oh, that's nice." And he goes through.
He vetoes $360 million worth of it, which was a record, I think, slightly. I think Charlie Crist had vetoed one year $358 million, but there was some of that money was duplicative of other funds, so it didn't really count. This was all separate appropriations, and Rick Scott vetoed about $360 million.
What's your point of view on that? You think?
He's the governor. That's his job. You know,
There were some worthy causes that were just left twisting in the wind?
There always are.
Yeah.
There always are. And a lot of these, something like $60 million in spending sprang from the forehead of Zeus on a Monday night in the last week of the special session. The House and Senate conferees were negotiating multi-billion dollar things in prisons and transportation and education, and they weren't, they needed to get some money together, make some people happy, and get the votes to get a compromise to reach a deal. And on Monday night, they adjourned on Friday, and on Monday, the approximately $60 million in mostly previously unheard member projects just leaped into the budget.
All of a sudden showed up.
And suddenly there were smiles all around, handshakes. They passed out a budget, got it to the members' desks on Tuesday. It sat for the required 3 days, and they voted on it Friday. Well, then it goes to the governor, and some of that oil that makes the gears mesh, some of that was vetoed out, including the biggest example, of course. The Senate president had wanted, I want to say, $15 million for a downtown campus for the University of Central Florida, which the governor vetoed, which the governor said it was not in the Board of Governors' work plan. They hadn't requested it. Everybody else said, well, you know, the Senate president crossed the governor on Medicaid expansion and very publicly had been critical of him. There were a few other things around the state. Here in Tallahassee, I think Bill Montford had a road project that disappeared from the budget, a few other things like that. But the it's the governor's job and the governor's prerogative. He may have burned some bridges, and he may have alienated some. Jack Latvala, the senator from Clearwater, was talking about he did a lot last year to get Rick Scott reelected, and a lot of Republicans endorsed him and very avidly worked for him in a tight race with Charlie Crist, when a lot of other Republicans, rank-and-file Republican voters, might have supported Crist, and they didn't get much reward for their
So they felt a bit betrayed there, huh? And as of today, we still don't have a Senate president, which is a bit unusual for this point in the calendar.
Yeah, we know who's going to be the House Speaker, and there's still, for the next term, and there's still a fight for the Senate presidency. Senator Joe Negron from down around Port St. Lucie and Senator Latvala, who I mentioned before, are both in it.
And help us understand, too, the significance of the Senate presidency in terms of that person's role regarding legislation.
Oh, well, both
because
the
Speaker
and
they set the tempo.
Yeah, oh, very much so. The Senate president will make assign members to committees. If you want to be on judiciary, you want to be on transportation, you want to be on appropriations, you'd better be friends with the Senate president. The Senate president also assigns every bill to committees. And if a bill gets four committee references, that's usually code for we don't really want to hear about this again. If it gets five committee references, you even the children in the gallery can figure out this bill is doomed. But If, on the other hand, your bill only gets one committee reference and then to the Rules Committee to be put on the calendar, that signals that, and of course, chairmen, once they're put in that position, they can ask for a bill to be assigned to their committee, or they can schedule it, or they can refuse to schedule hearings on something.
Right. Yeah.
Just not hear the bill, and even if it's passed the House, kill it that way. And the Senate president just has enormous, and of course, appointing the conferees who will eventually resolve the budget or other issues that are hung up between the House and Senate.
Right.
It's a two-year term.
Yeah. I know you're not given to prognostication, but if you were a betting man, who would you say would get the nod for this position?
I haven't heard. I have not been covering this, haven't been following, but reading the other Capitol reporters around town, I think Joe Negron has an edge here.
Okay.
But that's purely based on just what I've read in the blogs and things like that.
Yeah. Folks, we're talking with Bill Cotterell, a good friend of the show and a friend to all of us in Florida who want to possibly somehow decipher what goes on in Florida politics. And, of course, for us locally, it's a big deal. I noticed Leon County came together on this question of gerrymandering we were talking earlier.
Yeah.
And he had these two guys who kind of looked at each other and said, we really need the county to be the county.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So for that sake, they came to agreement. Then we had the bit of controversy going on down there at Panacea, and good old Halsey had put up this bill so that they could vote on whether they wanted to incorporate, right?
Yes.
And then the voters shot it down, he told me, by 20 votes. Bill Cotterell, our good friend, and this guy who clearly has his running shoes on here, so he's got to run and go check out some other lead and another story. Bill, thanks for being with us today.
I enjoyed it. It's always fun.
Folks, we're coming up here to the top of the hour. We've got ABC News up ahead. We'll be back with more Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks.
And I'm Sue Semrau, head coach of Florida State women's basketball team.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help, and the Tallahassee Food Challenge is a great way to do it.
Join us in giving generously. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families.
Look for the Tallahassee Food Challenge truck at your favorite grocery store in the weeks ahead. Your donation will be delivered directly to these charities that do so much to help all of us.
Take the challenge. Fill the truck.
Feed the hungry. Find out more at TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
The most talked about topics in town, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're in the second hour of this here fine radio show, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Your humble host, doing my very best to navigate through the myriad of exciting topics. Very cool people doing very cool things. There's a lot of it. And, man, I wish we had all day to tell you, but we get a few here and there that seem to grab my attention and our attention as a staff, and we are so pleased that we've had with us in this first hour Miriam Dady and talking with these good people with Socially Loved. Eric is a very smart young man who has crafted this opportunity, and we endorse that. Hope he will do well in it. We had Bill Cotterell telling us all about Florida politics. Now I've got Tim Linnefelt coming up here shortly to try to keep us in touch with the good people at Florida State Football. Their camp starts this week. So everybody's keeping eyes on who will be the rising stars. There's some folks competing for that quarterback spot. Sean will probably be the nod, but, you know, that's to be seen, isn't it? So that's why we got Tim here to help us understand all of that. In the face of and in spite of more recent disappointing news regarding this freshman quarterback who was dismissed from the team, and now another player who has been suspended, and then another that decommitted or discommitted or uncommitted, reversed his commitment decision. And nonetheless, the beat goes on, and Florida State football will no less, I'm sure, deliver a rousing season in one way or another, and we'll continue to keep eyes on our beloved Jameis Winston as he takes his role
starting quarterback for Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Good friend of the show and friend to so many, Gene Deckerhoff, of course, calls the games for them. And Gene and I talked recently about how excited he is. I think Tim had that conversation with him as well. And we should give a shout-out to our good friend Barry Kay and company over here at 93.3 FM, the folks that bring you this show here locally. Freedom 93, as they're known. Well, guess what? That's going to happen on their station, Bucks Football. Yeah, it's coming up. So if you're not near a TV somewhere, if you're not at the game, you can listen to Tampa Bay Football at your home station, 93.3 FM, where Tallahassee comes to talk. And this here radio show is where people come to have conversation. And so we're going to have that conversation with another fine young man. Jim Croteau will be with us towards the end of the hour as we talk about America's Second Harvest of the Big Bend, full of all sorts of good information there about this ongoing need for us to support and get ourselves involved with their work as a supplier, a sort of watershed for all of the other community organizations that are food assistance charities, and they rely on America's Second Harvest to make that happen. And they've been faced with some of their complications of late, and Jim has helped to navigate them through that. He's a remarkable individual. If you don't know Jim Croteau, you ought to. He's a guy who, prior to his role with America's Second Harvest, led Elder Care Services, and I think he was there for a number of years. We'll find out from him his experience there. But Elder Care Services, which provides a number of things, including the Senior Core Services, covering 14 counties. That was his role over there. Now he leads the folks at America's Second Harvest with all of that background. He was also an interim state ombudsman for long-term care in Florida with the Florida Department of Elder Affairs. He spent 35 years with Leon County Schools in positions of elementary school teacher and a staff development director. I mean, his resume reads with rather impressive style and vigor. He has served this community and communities at large faithfully in a lot of different capacities. So congratulations to America's Second Harvest for having him at the helm, because I think you'll find that over the next number of months and years ahead that we're much better off for his contribution. So we'll have him with us here before the show is out today, and we'll find out what's going on. And meanwhile, we're trying to figure out what's going on with all kinds of things going on around town. Have you noticed the progress being made out there at the center of Tallahassee, what many of us know as the Tallahassee Mall, renamed Center of Tallahassee? And Tamarin Waters did a great job in reporting this earlier in the week, talking about their 6,500-seat amphitheater. Have you found out about this? A 6,500-seat amphitheater going up. You can already see the roof of that thing. It's enormous. That'll be a cool contribution. It's part of their whole open outdoor sort of feel, the open town square concept that Alex Baker has imagined. He's the developer of this particular project for the whole mall. And in fact, in doing so, the Center of Tallahassee Mall is reshaping the local neighborhood. And already there's a roundabout that's going to be installed or has been installed and will open soon, I guess in a couple of weeks. The School of Arts and Sciences is going to open there in January. Lots of ways in which this revitalization of this mall is going to bring life to the community. So it's a good thing. There are other activities you might want to pay attention to, especially in the music community. You know, we favor local musicians here. So let's talk about that. There's a Sunday brunch music series tomorrow from an ongoing series at 101 Restaurant. and that goes from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. They've got some locals there performing. Wailing Wolves is going to be at the Riverside Cafe tomorrow night from 8 till 11, so that's a cool thing. Let's see. We've got Jeff Jensen out there at the Bradfordville Blues Club. Now, that's tonight from 10 until 11:30, so you want to catch that. Waterworks has their institution, the institution at Waterworks, they're calling it, and that's every Saturday night, and they provide you with the finest in alternative 80s dance music. Okay, so that's at the Waterworks. See how all of this is going on? And then, I mentioned Wailing Wolves. It turns out they're at Riverside Cafe tonight as well. So Riverside Cafe featuring Wailing Wolves tonight and tomorrow night. Okay, got that. So you see, when you say there's just nothing going on around town, well, it's just not true. And I want to tell you, we've got it going on here with Tallahassee Talks because we've got such a great lineup for you. And all of this is made possible because of our fine sponsors. We certainly want to include in that listing our good friends over there at A Country Rose Florist, the finest in floral arrangements and fresh-cut flowers, catering. And now they've made moves toward a new facility. They're going to be located in Midtown very soon, and I think they just closed on that deal. So stay tuned for more details on that. We'll keep you posted. You can find them online at acountryroseflorist.com. Stay with me.
Folks, there are four ways to shine in life, and Mary Maids has it all going on: experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. And that's why we rely on Mary Maids right here at our studios. They are proficient, and they are reliable. And I want to tell you, when I come into the office and I find the studio fresh and clean, it's a great feeling. And the neat thing about it is they get into all the details that I probably would overlook. But I want to tell you something else. As a new customer, when you sign up for their 24 weekly or biweekly cleanings, on your first cleaning, you're going to save up to $400 because they'll spend that first cleaning doing the extra deep cleaning that you probably would do if you wanted to do it yourself, but you don't have to. You can call Mary Maids. It's the best thing to do. And let me tell you something. Here's another special offer. You're going to save yourself 10% on that first call just by mentioning Tallahassee Talks when you call. Would you do that for me? Call Mary Maids this week. Here's the number, 386-2205, and tell them, I heard your ad on Tallahassee Talks, and I'm ready to receive 10% discount on my service. They'll do it for you. They're right here in Tallahassee. You can go online at marymaids.com.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
The Linnefeld Sports Report is on the air, and we have Tim Linnefeld with us. How are you, sir?
I am doing great, Brian. How are you?
Florida State football coming at us.
Yeah.
Let's see. Camp starts this coming Thursday.
Right.
And Florida State has had its share of controversies going into the season. But then again, a lot of teams. I think Florida State gets singled out on a lot of this stuff, because as I look around, we're not the only ones that have to deal with some housekeeping. And yeah, you sometimes you're competing with yourself more so than anybody else getting things squared away. But it seems like Jimbo has taken that in stride.
Yeah, I think so. It was a big topic of discussion, obviously, at ACC Media Days recently. Jimbo Fisher met with a swarm of reporters for more than an hour, taking and fielding questions, and the first probably 25 minutes or so of that were all related to off the field stuff, that's kind of the way it goes. But it was interesting. I think that it was certainly appropriate for Jimbo Fisher to address those issues and talk about them. But at the same time, you kind of reached a point of diminishing returns after what
else are you
10,
say?
15 minutes. There's only so many ways, different ways you can answer the same question.
Yeah.
But then, moving on, we finally did get to some football questions, and he was awfully, I thought pretty insightful, giving giving a guy a look at this year's team and some of the things that he thinks as practice gets ready to get going.
Well, when you consider the breadth and the depth of their talent, mm-hmm. We got two players with question marks here. Well, actually one with no question mark. It's been answered. But the bulk of Florida State football remains
pretty promising.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the big thing when I look at this team is there's plenty of talent, and there can't help but be plenty of talent when you've recruited the way Florida State has in the last couple of years. But when you look up and down the depth chart, a lot of it is not proven. You know, we have lots of guys with plenty of skill, lots of guys who have played really well in practice, were all stars in high school, but they haven't done it yet on the college stage. So the question now is, can these guys who have been successful every stage of their career, can they now take it, you know, one more level? And so, you know, there's plenty of reason to think that they can, but until they do it, there's always going to be kind of a little bit of a question
mark.
What are
you going to be watching for this Thursday?
You know, I really want to see, you know, who's taking reps at quarterback, who's kind of getting the majority of the reps. We started off with the preseason depth chart was released a couple weeks ago at quarterback. Sean McGuire, who is the number one starter coming out of spring, is still listed at number one. J.J. Cosentino, the redshirt freshman, is number two. And then Everett Golson, who just transferred in from Notre Dame, seems to have a lot of hype and buzz around him, and I think a lot of people assume is going to come in and win that job. He's listed as the number three quarterback, and obviously that sort of raises your eyebrows a little bit. But then it kind of also makes sense too for a guy who has literally never taken a single solitary snap at Florida State to at least start as number three. But I'm curious to see how long it stays that way. And if and when Everett Golson starts to maybe assert himself in that race.
If Sean is the heir apparent, how does he match up? Let's play scenarios here. Put him in as your starting quarterback at Florida State, and how does he do against, let's say, other teams in ACC or beyond?
Well, you know, I think, look, it's whoever wins this job is going to have a tough job because they're going to be compared to Jameis Winston, and that's really not fair. He was, you know, a savant. For all the noise that surrounded him, especially over the last season, he was a really, really, really good quarterback. You know, a once in a generation type of guy, like a Mozart. I mean, he was just awesome. And people, I think, kind of lost sight of that over the last year or so, and there was plenty of reason too. But I mean, he was really good. And so whoever comes in after that is going to have a hard time living up to that. But we saw how Sean McGuire can do against ACC teams. He did it against Clemson. He played in what was one of Florida State's most difficult games of the season and guided them, helped them to, you know, honestly, quite frankly, an improbable victory over a big-time rival. So, you know, I think that he's not a lot of guys aren't as talented or as dynamic as Jameis Winston. But can he do the job? Can he make the throws to keep them in games? I think he can.
And speaking of our dear friends at Clemson, they have certainly gotten a lot of accolades going in. I think they're ranked number one in the ACC at this point.
Preseason poll, they were ranked number one. I mean, the reporter types picked Clemson.
Guys like
to win
you.
The ACC. Yeah.
What do you know anyway?
Absolutely nothing. I didn't vote in this year's poll. I usually try not to. But why is that? I don't know. It's weird. I have a hard time coming up with opinions sometimes.
Well, unlike the rest of us who seem to be opinionated about everything. So just on the a little side note there in regard to Jameis Winston and the Bucks, we should give a shout out to the good folks at 93.3, our flagship station here, because they're going to be carrying Bucks football this year.
That's pretty cool.
So it is cool. You know, hometown crowd will be listening to 93.3, and if you're not watching him on the tube or at the game, you're out there traveling around, you can listen to the radio 93.3 and hear Jameis down there just wailing on his opponents.
And, Gene Deckerhoff actually
all within the last 8 minutes of the game.
Gene Deckerhoff actually stopped by my office.
Is that right?
You know, he calls the Bucks games.
Yes, he does.
And he was saying he's gearing up the van. He has a big old conversion van that he takes to and fro. But he's excited about it. He said that he called every single game of Derek Brooks' career between Florida State and Tampa Bay, and he's hoping to do the same for Jameis Winston.
That's very cool. So going a little further than down the list, when you look at receivers, if you look at running backs, let's stay on the offense for the moment.
Sure.
Who are the stars there in your mind?
Well, it's again, you know, kind of what we touched on a little bit earlier. There's so many new guys that have an opportunity to step up and make some things happen. And at receiver, Rashad Greene, who was sort of one of the best receivers, if not maybe the best receiver in school history, he's gone now. So you're going to be looking at you know, some underclassmen. There's going to be Travis Rudolph and Ermon Lane are a pair of sophomores, who I think people should be really, really excited about. Jesus Wilson, Bobo Wilson, is your most experienced guy. Showed a lot of flashes, but he's going to be kind of the guy that people look to now as your most experienced player. Tight end Nick O'Leary is gone. On the offensive line, you're losing four senior starters. So again, it sounds kind of doom and gloom when you say it like that, I guess. But
and we lost the ball guy.
Yeah.
Where did he go? He's
with the Atlanta Falcons now.
Come on.
Although I don't know the full story on that, but I heard the other day that he'll actually be here at some point this year.
I hope so.
He's
our good luck charm. Maybe
running
up and down the field. That's awesome.
Maybe he is. Yeah. But to take that back, there's lots of reason for hope, I guess. The one returner on the offensive line is a sophomore named Roderick Johnson, who everybody thinks is just going to be fantastic. Was a preseason All ACC.
Yeah.
Despite only starting, I think he started five games last year. Two of the new guys coming in on the line are junior college players, or should be junior college players, so they have some experience at a lower collegiate level. But it's not like they're coming straight out of high school. So there are some next men up that we believe are capable.
Defense, who are our stars there?
Defensively, start with the defensive back Jalen Ramsey. He's going to be, if he's not an All-American, it'll be because he got beat out by somebody otherworldly. He came to ACC Media Days a couple weeks ago and was asked sort of matter-of-factly, do you believe you're the best player in the country? And he said, well, yeah. So it's kind of funny because he definitely is he's very confident and borderline brash, but to play that position to be the guy that's defending against the pass, you look at guys like Deion Sanders or look at Terrell Buckley or look at with the Seahawks, Richard Sherman, man, all those guys, you have to be that way if
brash
you're going to play that
brass.
Position. Because if you're not, man, because things are going to go wrong when you play that position, and you got to be able to just flush that and go back. And he certainly has that master. So he's probably the preeminent player on defense. There's a couple seniors in the linebacking corps, and Terrence Smith and Reggie Northrup, that are both pretty important to this year's team. And then a slew of guys on the defensive line.
Tim Linnefelt, the Linnefelt Sports Report. Thanks for being with us this
morning.
Anytime.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks.
And I'm Kathy Griffin, president of Widden Glass.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help, and the Tallahassee Food Challenge is a great way to do it.
Join us in giving generously. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families.
Look for the Tallahassee Food Challenge truck at your favorite grocery store in the weeks ahead. Your donation will be delivered directly to these charities that do so much to help all of us.
Take the challenge. Fill the truck.
Feed the hungry. Find out more at TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back talking with the interim chief executive officer for America's Second Harvest of the Big Bend, our friend Jim Croteau. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Thanks
for having
me.
Good to see you. Yes, thank you for being here. And on your first occasion to talk with our audience about this mission that America's Second Harvest of the Big Bend has been at for a number of years, your arrival of late has been, I think, welcomed with all sorts of interesting circumstances, not the least of which has been the fact that you had to relocate, which boggles the mind. And for those of you who have not ever seen the size of this facility, both prior and now, I mean, it's an undertaking. If I recall being inside of that massive warehouse, it's like an aircraft hangar, and now you've had to pack everything up. You've moved into this new location. And that was a bit of a challenge. Tell us about that whole process.
Well, obviously, I came into it somewhat late. The issues that we're having at the old facility affected the food safety. And obviously, that's the number one concern of the organization is to protect the integrity of the food that we acquire and distribute.
Yeah.
So Feeding America, the parent organization, raised some concerns. And when the business wasn't able to handle all the issues that were there, they let the previous executive director, CEO, go and look for some assistance. So they had called me in to kind of be a consultant to look at their situation. I looked at their financial situation in the facility. Having been at Elder Care, I was familiar with the food service business somewhat. it was clear they were in desperate trouble. And in fact, they were just a couple of weeks from being closed down.
Wow, completely. And that's right. You had this prior stint with Elder Care Services for how many years?
For 5 years. Yeah, and we did, obviously, Meals on Wheels, where we did
it's a huge undertaking in and of itself, yeah.
So I realized the problem. I didn't have the solutions, but it was clear that if somebody from the community didn't step up, the organization was going to fail. And if you look at 6 million pounds of food that was distributed to over 50,000 people a month, we just couldn't let that happen.
And folks, do we stop and hear that? 6 million pounds of food. How many people?
50,000 people a month in 11 counties.
This is an organization that for hungry children and families is arguably a watershed. And from my understanding, Jim, America's Second Harvest of the Big Bend actually provides food for all of these other food assistance charities.
With the exception of a few programs, we are not a direct provider of food. We are a broker, so to speak, working with 130 different agencies in 11 counties, some nonprofits like the Refuge House and the Shelter, some faith-based organizations, and a number of churches throughout the region. And we coordinate with their food pantries and their soup kitchens and other distribution that they have to be sure that the food that we get reaches as best as we can establish the people with the greatest need. So our distribution model is based on the need within each county, which overall right now we're looking at 1 in 6 families who are food insecure. That is, they don't know where this weekend's food is coming from, how they're going to pay for it. And 1 in 4 kids in our community is affected by that, who they don't know whether their family's going to have adequate food. In fact, I was talking with a teacher this morning who said that they hate Monday mornings, low-income school, that the kids come in angry and upset, and it's because
they haven't eaten all weekend.
They're hungry.
Yeah. And if they're out of school for the summer, that's a challenge.
I mean, there's some programs.
The
school district
guys,
has expanded their summer feeding programs. Bethel expanded, got into summer feeding. And there are people in the community who are paying attention to it, but the need is so great, it's hard to meet it all.
Massive. In fact, my understanding, too, going back to your comment about the facility, this was an ongoing a set of issues that the officials there at America's Second Harvest were quite aware of, and they had been working to try to push back against the infestation. Given the fact that you're down there, I think there was a couple of vacant fields and so forth. It's just the way it is. You got 6 million pounds of food in there. There are some hungry critters that are going to want to get in.
Yeah, the facility itself had some structural issues in the area around it, abandoned buildings and swamp and the like that made it just impossible.
Not
to
the best
stay
place
there
for you guys to be. So now you've relocated. And
yes, and that in itself is somewhat miraculous if you look at it on the outside.
We call on divine intervention, I think, in most cases here.
We found the only facility between Jacksonville and Pensacola that was a food facility that had freezer and cooler, had been vacant for 7 years. And over a period of 3 weeks, we were able to sign a lease, get the place cleaned out, get the equipment working, carpets clean, air conditioner systems disinfected, and be able to move food in. And after 6 weeks, we had the Department of Agriculture inspection, food safe, move food in, and now we're fully operation, hoping to do 7 million pounds of food this year.
And there was a question there, too, about the cost of that. And I think the figure was somewhere around $50,000 or something?
$100,000 we've spent thus far on the move, which has been supported by the city and the county. They helped us out with the
because you had thrown cost that out and said, guys, we can do this, but we're going to need some help.
Right. Yeah. Now, the operating deficiencies because failure to get the CHSP grant last year and the lack of revenue during the time of the transition, we needed $200,000 just to make it through the summer to get to our grant season. And we're within $40,000 or $50,000 of that total right now. But summertime is really hard. We did have the postal workers helped raise 60,000.
13th year they've been doing that or something?
Food,
yeah.
For us. And AMWAT, fill the truck drive, gave us another 10,000 pounds.
Yep. Tallahassee Democrat.
That's almost all gone in the next couple of weeks.
Isn't that something?
It'll be gone. And we don't have a full supply to replace it, given the demands of the agencies that we work with who need to fill out their pantries.
And see, that's the part of this that we've gotten sensitive to, and that was courtesy of these folks at Catholic Charities. So even the food donations themselves, in addition to your cost of operation, become a critical question, don't they?
Yeah, people ask, how do we get food? Part of the issue is not that the food isn't available. It's just that there is some cost to acquire it, to look at it and examine it to be sure it's adequate, and then to deliver it to the agencies that distribute it. And, you know, to do 7 million pounds is going to cost us $1.5 million. It's approximately 20 cents a pound for us to pick up, process, and deliver food. We get some contributions from the agencies themselves who help cover some of the transportation costs, but that's only a third of the product that we're able to deliver. All our produce is free. All our USDA products are free. So we have to depend on grants, individual donations, and foundations that support us, and a few contracts that we have to get the funds for that. So when you realize that two-thirds of what you distribute has to be funded somehow, and that you could get more if you had additional dollars. Let's take canned donations, for example.
Right.
We love food drives.
Yeah.
The food drives, actually, including the postal workers and fill the truck, is less than 10% of the food that we process every year.
Really?
And, again, we have to examine every single can, every single package. You don't know how many jars of peanut butter some kid has stuck their finger in and put back in the closet before mom gave it away. And that takes time, and that takes effort.
Yeah.
But that canned food, you know, 5 pounds of food will provide 4 meals for a family. But for a dollar, which is often what that one can cost, we can get 4 or 5 times that much food that on the wholesale market
really?
And through our network.
Okay.
And we could feed 4 or 5 times as many people. So the commodities are wonderful, but the cash allows us to leverage additional dollars to do that.
If you've got canned food on your shelf and you want to donate, God bless you, do it. If you got $10 and you can slip a check in the mail to Jim, he can make that 10 do the work, it sounds like, of 30 or even 50.
4 to 1 is
there you go. Right. So $40, your 10 just turned into 40 if you get it into his hands. Folks, we're talking to Jim Croteau. He is the interim CEO for America's Second Harvest of the Big Bend. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Stay with me.
I want to take just a minute and tell you about Chelsea Salon. They are the official hair care salon and spa for Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. And yes, this is how I am able to bring to you my very best every week, because though you can't see me, I know whether I'm at my best, and I need all the help that I can get. So when I go over to see Mary Fannin and her crew, they are proficient in everything they do. Wow. Well, I don't think there's anything that has to do with my personal look and feel that they don't do. Here's one review I read recently. This is a guy here in Tallahassee. He says, I am so happy I found this place, having just moved from Orlando, where I had a wonderful stylist for 15 years. Chelsea is the bomb. Well, there you go, guys. So it's not just for the ladies. Check it out this week. Chelsea Salon and Spa, the official hair care and salon stylists for Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hi, folks. I'm Jerry Thigpen, blues guitar player here in Tallahassee, coming at you for Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny on 93.
So we're back, and we're talking with Jim Croteau about this fantastic organization when you really look at it and look at the history of America's Second Harvest of the Big Bend. Jim's been at the helm here for several months, trying to help us navigate through some pretty rough water, but again, divine intervention being what it is. Always at the last minute, but boy, on time, with a facility that now allows them to properly store and distribute, what did you say, you're going for 7 million pounds of food, and yet the money and the food need to keep coming, don't they?
Yes, they do. And part of the business that we have, obviously, is acquiring and distributing food, but there's another part, another aspect that we think is just as important, and that's the community awareness, the idea that hunger is something that your friends and neighbors are experiencing, and you may not even be aware of it. Someone sitting next to you in church may not know where Sunday meal is coming from. That kind of community awareness is something that we have an obligation to build. And we have a number of people who volunteer who help us out at our warehouse and help us with the processing of food.
Right.
But more important are the people who volunteer with those agencies like the shelter and refuge house, people who volunteer with their church groups who have a pantry or who do a food distribution. That greater awareness, and even more than that, that special connection that happens when someone gets, we'll send a truckload with 10,000 pounds of food out to a church for a Saturday distribution.
Yes.
And they'll have 20 or 30 volunteers who will help unload it, put it in bags, check in people to be sure that they're meeting the income requirements, and then handing that out without judgment. And just a friendly, here, this is a gift from you for
indeed,
you.
Indeed.
If you need us, we're here to be able to reach and connect with us if we can help you in any other way. That broader awareness and that bigger involvement, we think, is just as important as the food, you know, that connection, that personal contact. And that's part of what our mission is. And you have to look at this whole food nation that we have with such a surplus. That we have to learn to stop, look around, and pay attention to those in need around
and
us.
And on that note, it seems of late there's been a bit of movement effort to question this business of throwing away good food among corporations and grocery stores and restaurants. Some investigation has indicated that this notion that, well, we're going to get sued if we donate food to this charity, if in fact the food is found to be tainted or something. None of that has ever happened to our understanding.
Well, and there are laws that protect the industry from being sued for those kinds of donations. Obviously, we check food quality as we get it, and the relationship that we have with the Publixes and the Walmarts and many of the restaurants in town as well is one where there are certain parameters that they work within. For example, meat. Yeah. If they have a sell-by date in the meat and they freeze the meat by that sell-by date, then that frozen meat is good for another month or two.
Right.
And we're able to collect it. Walmart, for example, we visit three times a week and pick up their produce, we pick up their meat, we pick up their products that are out of date, and we process those. Publix is a wonderful partner as
That's
well.
That's great to hear.
So there is a consciousness there. One area that people don't realize is that there are food in the farmers' fields that is perfectly good food. It may not be perfect in the way it looks. So
restaurant quality, let's say.
Yeah, a restaurant or a grocery store may not want it, but it sits there because there's nobody to pick it. The gleaning of fields there. We have six or seven farmers who are willing to let us, after they get the top quality out of their fields, come in and pick up the next quality, and there are just not enough volunteers to go out there. We have a three-acre garden that we got 1,600 pounds of potatoes out of, but we only have a dozen volunteers. Could use three dozen to grow greens, to grow turnips, to do
other stuff. Now listen here, people. Jim has just told us we ain't got no excuses. If you don't have any canned food you can donate, if you don't have any money, have you got a couple hours that you can volunteer and help this man gather perfectly good food that can feed hungry people? I love this idea. Why is this not better known?
Well, as you can understand, people have busy lives, and to make a commitment. And what we're trying to do is realize that if you can get families involved, then
it's fun.
You build the next generation. Yeah. So we started recently a Family Saturday where you can come out to the warehouse on Saturday with your kids, middle school, high school kids, and get them involved. And, and the process and let them understand. But you can't volunteer with us without getting a 20-minute overview of why we're doing, why we're in the business, and what the mission is.
What a great thing to do for your kid. Help that child understand how hunger as a problem, as a challenge, faces us, and then how this organization is working, and then their contribution to that. Man, I'd rather do that than take them to a space center. Although a space center would be fun, this would be a lifelong rewarding experience. What a great idea.
Yeah, and especially, you know, you get a kid out on a farm who now understands the connection and the food
change.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, you mean it doesn't come out of a box?
Right, exactly.
Wow. Folks, you know, this is how the Tallahassee Food Challenge got started with us. And to that side, I'll say that website is always available to you. We have a full listing there of all of these charities that Jim has referred to, those that are church pantries, the food assistance charities like Echo or the Tallahassee Catholic Charities Food Pantry. There are all kinds of organizations around you and I, and they're all listed there for you, along with some specific instructions, the kinds of food items that are the best to give. Okay, so if you've got a ham a fresh ham, they can still handle that. But food items are packaged or canned are going to be a little easier for them to manage. And then there comes this business of operating funds and their ability to leverage not only the funds that they need for their operations, but the food that they can buy. Again, we said earlier, a $10 donation can translate into $40 worth of buying power because of the relationship that America's Second Harvest has with these food providers. Then there comes the volunteer opportunities. So I encourage you, TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com is the website. We're going to stay close to Jim and his organization in updating you with information. It's just another way for us to reach out and encourage you to give consistently. What's the most critical need for you right now? Here we are going into the month of August, and you've mentioned there is a shortage currently, or at least you're coming up to a point where you're going to need some more help, aren't you?
Yeah, I made July payrolls, which was the first challenge that we had. Yeah. We're still a little short for the next two.
So you got people waiting on a paycheck, basically.
It's the operating funds that we need to keep going until the grant season starts, and we're looking forward to getting the support from United Way and CHSP.
Right.
And we have a couple other grants coming in the fall. So
just sort of in between.
We make the next 2 months, we'll be in good shape for the next year.
Okay. Well, friend, we want to make sure that we're a part of helping you. Thank you for being a part of our show today. Folks, Jim Croteau, who is the interim CEO for America's Second Harvest of the Big Bend, a great organization, and we're fortunate we have this man helping lead the way. Thank you, Jim, for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being with us today. That's what we've got for you here. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, a production of Alcom Marketing and Advertising. We invite you to join us again next Saturday morning right here, 9 o'clock on 93.3 FM, our flagship station in Tallahassee. Carl Cerny is our executive producer. I'm Brian Cerny, looking forward to having you back. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
Hi, I'm Joe Doty. Come truck it up with me this week, and I'll save you money. Get your deluxe detail package, complete window tinting, and heavy-duty floor mats starting at $339.95.
Truck and Car Concepts. We're your one-stop shop for tricking out your truck. Truck and Car Concepts. Their cars were number one by far.
You'll save big bucks on the package, and I'll even throw in a great pair of free sunglasses. Come on, truck it up with us this weekend and bring your cars too. You're gonna love it.
Truck and Car Concepts. We're your one-stop shop. We always aim to please. Truck and Car Concepts. Everything is here from A to Z.
Call 656-8800.